I think this country has to have a once in three generation conversation. I don't think we should have it in the 2012 campaign. I think we should have it this year, all and right. I'd be glad to participate in that.
So there was Newt Gingrich again on a Sunday talk show yesterday. Last week he was on the cover of the New York Times Magazine, and there they all were on Meet the Press, still talking about whether Rush Limbaugh or Michael Steele or somebody else or nobody is the head of the Republican Party. Did Gingrich think it was Rush?
The fact is, he has a large audience. The audience believes him. The audience calls their members. The audience has an effect. He's not the leader of the Republican Party, and Michael Steele's one of the leaders. Bobby Jindal, who you had on recently, is one of the leaders. Sarah Palin's one of the leaders. Eric Cantor's a rising new leader. Paul Ryan's there are tons of leaders of the Republican Party.
Meanwhile, the new edition of Newsweek features a column by conservative David Frum, who wrote the Axis of Evil speech, saying Ronald Reagan was great for his time, but largely irrelevant today. What's going on? Can either party lead us out of the biggest crisis, as Newt put it, in three generations? Our guest for this, Matt Towery, former campaign chairman for Gingrich once upon a time, but someone known for bipartisanship. He has presided over the mostly Democratic Georgia House of Representatives. He is also a pollster who has worked mostly in the South. He's an expert on government contracting, so we'll plug him into our Shovel Watch this morning as we follow the stimulus spending. And Matt Towery is author of a brand new book called Paranoid Nation, the real story of the 2008 fight for the presidency. Matt Towery, welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I have to tell you, we did expand our polling this year. We polled nationwide for Politico. We were their pollsters.
Oh, you were Politico's pollster.
Yes, we were, and in fact, we were judged recently by Nate Silver in his 538 site, which I think most of D.C. looks at.
And we have Nate on here all the time, so our listeners know him.
He named us one of the three most accurate pollsters in the nation for 2008. So we were clearly nonpartisan, and I was pleased to be named by Nate as one of the three most accurate pollsters.
All right. So what do you think about these polls that are coming out in recent days that seem to find people are skeptical of President Obama's policies, but they find him personally very worthy of job approval, and the Republicans not so much? Does it mean anything this early in the administration?
Oh, I think it does. Look, I'm not surprised at all. First of all, Barack Obama's extremely likable. Is why he was elected president. The Republicans right now seem to be chasing their tail, as you just noted with the intro discussion and the reference to the Newsweek article about Rush Limbaugh. And so I'm not surprised in the least. I've been interviewed all over the country, it seems, lately for the book Paranoid Nation. But I told CNN the day after the inauguration in an interview that I thought the, quote, honeymoon would be extended not with Congress, not with the folks who, work in Washington, D.C. and are professionals at this business, but with the American public. And I think that's proved to be the case.
I want to let our listeners know that you may be hearing the faint sound of a siren in the background. We're just doing a fire alarm test here at the station, and we think some of it is bleeding into the on-air studio. And, folks, you should do this at home, too, because we just turned the clocks ahead over the weekend, and that's when we're all supposed to check our home fire alarm system. So make sure you have one. This is when you're supposed to change the battery. And if you hear a little let's see if we can hear it. So the battery works in the WNYC fire alarm system. You know, we once had a guest, Matt, I'm glad you're here on time, because we once had a guest on this show on the Monday after, I should say we didn't have a guest on this show. It was the Monday after Spring Ahead. And he forgot to spring ahead. And he was scheduled for a nice 11 o'clock interview, and he showed up promptly at 12.
I managed to spring ahead, thank goodness.
And Leonard Lopez had no openings on his show that day, so the guy had to go home. All right, so now people know why they're hearing some faint fire alarm noises coming out of their radios. This disconnect between the policies and the man. Ronald Reagan had that. A lot of people disapproved of his policies as too conservative, really. But they gave him very high approval ratings as president. Now, that was much deeper into the administration. I don't know if we can generalize from that to Obama at all yet. But do you see any of that dynamic? Because I think people are skeptical of the amount of stimulus spending, from what I've seen of the polls. I think people are skeptical of the amount being given to the banks, to the car companies. How do you read those numbers?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I get a kick out of everybody who talks about their political bona fides. I don't claim to have them now because I got out when I got into the business of writing a syndicated column and polling. And believe it or not, it's easy to leave a party. It's not very hard to leave partisan politics. But I was there in those early days. I worked on Capitol Hill. Let me tell you something interesting, and this is in my book, Paranoid Nation, that most people do not realize. Ronald Reagan came into office when he ran for the presidency, for the Republican nomination. He was the outsider. I was basically told by the establishment Republican Party, I was a young guy working for both Newt Gingrich and also a U.S. Senate candidate who won, that I shouldn't even mention the name Ronald Reagan. And that was the case all over the country with establishment Republicans because he had run against Gerald Ford, and that was considered to be, in 1976, and that was considered to be just heresy. So Ronald Reagan, first of all, was not beloved by all the Republicans at the time. He's beloved now as revisionist and as he became more popular with the nation. Secondly, there's something very critical that people don't realize about Ronald Reagan. He had several policies that the American people like. They like it in Barack Obama, and they like it in Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was a non-interventionist. He did not believe in intervening in massive ways unless he made a few mistakes in deciding to do so. But he did not believe in committing massive troop forces in dealing with various issues. Great example, Muammar Gaddafi was considered to be the greatest terrorist of our time in the 1980s. What did Ronald Reagan do? He didn't invade. He dropped two bombs next to his tent, and we didn't hear anything from Gaddafi for years afterwards. And that was his approach. Also, he was very much into exactly what Barack Obama is talking about doing with regard to foreign policy, and that is you talk to your enemy. This Republican concept that you can't talk to someone who is your enemy because you somehow then give them credence. Well, we would have never seen the fall of the Soviet Union had Ronald Reagan not engaged in all of the discussions he had with Gorbachev. So there are a lot of things with regard to Reagan that were style-oriented. But the other reason that Americans were willing to reelect Ronald Reagan was because in many ways he reflected the sort of style that they liked to see. Now, would Ronald Reagan have engaged in a giant stimulus package? I don't know. But we have to remember one thing. Ronald Reagan came out of the era of World War II and Franklin Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he oftentimes referred to Franklin Roosevelt. And so I think there are more similarities between the two people, but I think you have to read a book like Paranoid Nation to know the real history. Most Americans just are not given the true background of what happens behind the scenes. And if you don't know that, then each night when you're given these snippets, you're either forced to be on one side, the Rush side, or on the Keith Olbermann side, and there's no middle ground. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of middle ground in America.
Absolutely. Context, 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 right?
Yes, sir.
So how much do you agree with David Frum, whose bona fides as a conservative are certainly unquestionable? He wrote President Bush's Axis of Evil speech, and people know him as a longtime, quite conservative activist. In this Newsweek piece, he writes, for example, that Reagan and his policies were perfect for that time, the 1970s going up to 1980, where you could link most of the problems of the country to government. And he says government is implicated in many of today's top domestic concerns as well, but the connection is really different. So today he says we need to put free market health care reform, not tax cuts, at the core of our economic message, our being the Republican Party. We need an environmental message. You don't have to accept Al Gore's predictions of imminent gloom to accept that it cannot be healthy to pump gigatons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. He says we need to modulate our social conservatism, not jettison, but modulate, especially on gay rights. The under 30 generation has arrived at a new consensus. And he concludes, every day Rush Limbaugh reassures millions of core Republican voters that no change is needed. How much do you agree with Frum?
Well, let's start at the beginning. I literally, if you read this book, Paranoid Nation, you'll read where, and I took my columns that I've been writing for years for Creative Syndicate, mm-hmm. and I kept saying the Republicans are destroying themselves because they were focused on the wrong issues. And I think he's right. The Republicans have to have an answer on the environment. You can't put your head in the sand. You don't have to totally agree with Al Gore. I think that they do have to have a new solution with regard to health care. We can't ignore the fact that there are millions of Americans that don't have access to health care right now. The Republicans in general, look, the Bush administration was 8 years of basically intervention around the world, taking the advantage of the 9/11 crisis in order to extend power, and enrichment of a small group of individuals and a small group of organizations, from the pharmaceutical manufacturers who received that ridiculous Medicare drug program, which I was completely against, because the money, people don't realize, the money from that, all the major money went to the drug companies. And then the poor individuals who signed up for it thereafter, they had to simply ferret through a very confusing process to see if they would qualify and have any discount at all on their drugs. That's just one example. So with 8 years of that sort of nonsense, it's no shock that the Republicans are behind the curve, not in touch with the average American, particularly younger voters, who, by the way, in the next cycle will be older. They'll go from that famous 18 to 29 category that we have to 30 to 44 category, which is a critical swing category when we do our polling. So I think he's right about that. With regard to Rush, I view Rush Limbaugh this way, very simply. He's an entertainer. He's not a bad guy. He's not I don't think he's a vicious person. But he knows what he's doing. He's entertaining. And I agree with Newt. He's not the leader of the Republican Party. I've never thought of any of these guys on the radio, whether it's Sean Hannity or whether it's Rush Limbaugh or any of these people, as being leaders of the Republican Party. You know, the interesting thing about this is, I always ask this when I was on a panel on Fox and Friends recently, and everyone was arguing and the like. And I asked the question, and I said, have any of you ever had to cast a vote on a floor of a legislature, or have you ever been a nominee for statewide office? And the answer was no. Well, I have. I've done both of those. And I can tell you, leaders come from people who have had to do and actually play the game. Would you want me commenting on football in place of John Madden? The answer would be no, because I never played football. Well, you wouldn't want John Madden to be commenting on where we should be going in terms of the Republican mm-hmm. Party or the Democratic Party, because he was never serving right. in a legislature, never ran for office.
So there may be a value in politics to having inside points of view and outside points of view. But we have a few minutes left. Matt Towery, author of Paranoid Nation, The Real Story of the 2008 Fight for the Presidency, as well as a national pollster. In what sense do you mean paranoid?
Well, you know, it's funny. Every night I would be polling these races and caucuses and primaries, and then, of course, the general election. So I was up every night late, waiting for numbers the next morning and working on the book at the same time. And, you know, in the book, I talk about the fact that I've met or known every president since Richard Nixon, had been behind the scenes and seen a lot of things. And as I was writing the past history, and I was showing how it sort of dovetails with the campaign and where we were headed, I started realizing, as I would read articles each night, that the word paranoid kept being used by the candidates, by the pundits. It was just popping up left and right. I Googled it, and it just was showing up everywhere. So I began to believe that this country was losing faith in itself, or faith in its political system. And there was a sense of paranoia, which is oftentimes defined as a perhaps unjustified sense of persecution, or an unjustified sense of self-grandeur. And if that doesn't describe politics in general, I don't know what does. But clearly the nation is throughout the campaign, as the economy began to fall apart, and there were greater concerns on the part of the nation shifting from issues like immigration that were sort of divisive, but to really critical issues of keeping the banks open and the like, America began to become increasingly paranoid. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I mean it in a sense that you never knew when the next shoe was going to drop. And so I went back to past presidencies and past time periods where I knew the details behind, for example, Jimmy Carter. I grew up around Jimmy Carter mm-hmm. as a kid, being around the Reagan administration, being involved in the Bush campaigns, the first campaign, not George W. Bush. And I've seen this happen before, but not at this grand a scale. I think we've reached a level where this president is dealing with something the likes of which we've never seen in our lifetime. And so there's no shock that Americans would feel, quote, more paranoid. I just sort of lucked into the title, to be honest with you.
We've got a minute left, and I'm curious about your perspective on the stimulus bill in this respect. I gather you run a service called governmentbids.com.
No, we actually sold that. We built it up and sold it to a Canadian company, but we did run it at one time, yes.
I see. Okay. Well, with the expertise that you had in government contracting,
yes.
I'm curious if you see the stimulus spending as being transparent, as the Obama administration and Congress claim, or not so much?
Well, we don't know yet, because literally the money the first money that's gone out the door has gone to Medicaid. And that went very quickly to states, and they accepted it very quickly, and it was very necessary. The additional stimulus money will just begin to start to flow out. And we don't have the answer yet as to how transparent it will be. But if there's any transparency at all to it, it will be more transparent than expenditures have been in the past. And I know we're just wrapping up real quickly. But what most people need to realize is this was a stimulus package that is the equivalent of a total appropriations bill that usually takes an entire year to put together. So there will be plenty of shocks and little twists and turns in a document that's over 1,000 pages that was written in a matter of 3 weeks versus all of the hearings that you normally have and the markups that you have in a normal appropriations package.
Well, you may be interested to hear one of our guests next hour, Steve Call from the New America Foundation, who used to be the editor of the Washington Post. He is blogging the stimulus bill. In other words, he is reading line by line all 400-plus pages and writing a post about each little section. And he's going to do that with us in a series of appearances beginning next hour. So that's something that even Matt Towery, author of Paranoid Nation, the real story of the 2008 fight for the presidency, might want to hear. Matt, good job. Thank you very much.
I assure you. Thank you.
Thank you. Brian Lehrer.
Thank you.
On WNYC. Now, did you see the 14-year-old conservative wunderkind on the cover of the Times Style section yesterday? Well, we happen to have a speech excerpt from from young Jonathan Crone, the little rightward tipping teenager, as one of our video picks this week. And we're going to play that, a little bit of that clip right now.
Many people have come up to me and said, so you're a Republican, you know, you get up there and you do this Republican stuff and you talk about politics. And I'd always have to tell them that no, conservatism is not about the party, because the party's merely the shell. It's the inside, it's the filling that really means something. So I want to get that straight.
13, huh? You could see more of that and all five of this week's online video picks at wnyc.org/video.